Who's wrong and who's wronger? In this corner, followed by Millions James, the exploding unicorn breakwell. And in that corner, ignored by Millions, Steve Dash, Rinko Levin.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another Friday edition of Wrong and Wronger, where the concept says Friday, but the calendar says Saturday. And for you, it is Wednesday. This time-bending experience brought to you by my partner, who also happens to be a mythical creature, James the Exploding Unicorn Breakwell. And James, our pre-production meeting was actually quicker than usual today. What is going on with your zippity-doo-dah life?
Well, you might hear some hammering and grinding out on my front porch. My father-in-law is out there. He originally wasn't going to come back for the porch project today. Then he said he was, but I had already booked this very valuable time slot with you, and I knew if I didn't take it, I might never hear from you again. And I also was on the way back from the gym, so I had to cut my gym workout short, run in the door, hit the record button with you, and the second I'm done, I get to go outside for a full day of manual labor. So life is good. I'm looking forward to it.
Wow. All of that running around, I am just sitting with a cup of coffee, wearing underpants. All of this, by the way, for Mrs. Steve's own viewing pleasure. But I don't have the same morning routine on Saturdays that you do. I, James, am a man of leisure.
You are the opposite of a man of leisure. You just choose to invest your time, let's say, unwisely. You are the one who, on a whim, what? Will drive 19 states to commentate for a sports game for free, only to be reamed out by the referees, or to write a column for the local paper, or to become, or to try out for the local play, or to become the mayor. I don't know what you're up to right now. And this is all sandwiched between your day job, which is 1,000 miles away, and your ongoing slate of disasters on the ranch. You might be the busiest human being I know.
Underpants and coffee. People ask me, what's the secret to success? That, sir, is the recipe.
Well, all right then. Now, you're staying on brand. I am grateful that you at least wear underwear. We are all thankful for that. Are you recording outside or inside today?
I am inside, sitting at our kitchen table, which is ironically not in the kitchen.
You are not bound by the weather conditions. Where is your kitchen table, pray tell?
It is where the bedroom used to be, and now we'll call it the dining room, although it, like many rooms in the ranch, serves multiple functions.
Are you renovating again, or are you just confused about the function of furniture?
No, but the closet in the bedroom is not done yet. And so as Mrs. Steve is on to other things, like she put in a ceiling and is now working on the trim in the bedroom of the other cabin, her stuff is in the closet in the bedroom. My stuff is here in the dining room in a makeshift closet type situation.
Do you even have stuff? I mean, it's kind of like putting a lipstick on the pig, you know? It just doesn't matter how much we dress you up. You're going to look like you, and that's kind of rock bottom.
You know what's funny? I was just thinking, because I don't have a dedicated place for my stuff anywhere, I think you and I talked about this a few weeks ago, I tend to use the washing machine and the dryer as my hamper and dresser. And so I have many, many t-shirts, much to Mrs. Steve's chagrin. I probably have 200 or 250 t-shirts just from rock concerts I've been to and 5Ks I've run and places we've gone on vacation to. But the point is, I have maybe the same 6 or 7 t-shirts that I keep wearing over and over because they end up in the wash machine until I wash. And then they end up in the dryer where they sit until I wear them again. And that is my clothing rotation. Little insight into the mind of Olivas.
Mrs. Steve is a lucky, lucky woman, man. To have such a fashion icon walking about the roomless house, I mean, her heart must swell with pride and, dare I say, lust when she sees you.
It's all she can do to not swoon whenever I enter the room.
Man, is there a game plan? Is there like a goal date at which point, I'm not going to say the ranch is done because that's impossible, but just the inside of the ranch is done. Give me a date for that.
Well, we originally had it mapped out as a 2-year project, and now that we are past the 2-year mark, it has bled out to a 3-year project. Mrs. Steve is concerned with the inside of the house. I am far more concerned with the exterior, because there is a whole corner of the house that is still wide open to Mother Nature, and that includes both weather and critters, that Mrs. Steve seems reluctant to get patched up, fixed, and have siding put over. So I don't know when we're ever going to be done, but she keeps plugging away at it. And until one of us dies, which one of us almost did this past week, I think this may extend to a 4 or 5 year project eventually.
Well, that was a heck of a conversation hook you just dangled out there. I will take the bait. How did you, okay, and you said one of us, so how did one of you almost die this week?
I, James, you know I am a pillar of physical health and stamina, right?
Yeah, yes, we're going to go with yes just to keep this conversation moving.
I threw you a softball. All you had to do was agree, because you can see the truth.
That was going to be like a 9-hour tangent. And for once, I'm actually curious about what you have to say. So rather than derailing this conversation with a hilarious segue, I am going to allow you to awkwardly plod forward with whatever actual story you have to tell this time.
Well, I may have let my diet slide slightly off the rails for the last couple 57 years of my life, but I was having bad chest pains yesterday. And usually if I have some kind of physical malady, I don't tell Mrs. Steve, because then she says, go to the doctor. And then I say, I don't go to doctors. And then she says, you need to see a doctor. And then I say, I am a doctor. And then she gets angry, and then I get angry. And so I want to avoid all of that typically. However, yesterday I was sufficiently concerned because I woke up with them and they didn't go away by the time I got to the office. But I guess it wasn't really heart related, because it ended up, it would burn when I would breathe. And so I think I had some inflammation in my chest. And I often say I'm waiting for the big one, which ironically is a song from about 1984. Hot little 115-pound number Lorraine Lewis, in front of a band called Femme Fatale, kept singing, I'm waiting for the big one also, which I can't figure out why she was waiting for a heart attack, but that's neither here nor there. But I was bitten by a tick about 6 days ago. It was on Sunday. So now that heart problem, I think we kind of ruled that out. I was trying to figure out why I couldn't breathe, and when I did breathe, it burned. And I thought, well, is it COVID? But it's gone now. I don't have any cough. I never felt sick. And I don't know if it was an allergic reaction to something at the ranch, but this is our third spring here, so I don't know if that could possibly be it. I don't have any idea what it was, James, but I was knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
This was an incredibly unsatisfying story, bereft of detail and high on speculation. So did you actually go to the emergency room then? What was your level of medical care? I might have missed it because I'm a bad listener.
Well, Jay, and I can hear that you've got a lot of like pounding outside, just outside.
I'm glad that made it in the recording. Just for posterity's sake, I am not lying to you. My 71-year-old father-in-law is out there doing hard manual labor in the cold as I sit here and talk to you trying to drag out this story.
Well, I was sufficiently concerned when it actually got worse, but it was when I would stand up and walk, it would get bad. And then when I would sit down, it would go away. So I thought, ooh, I'll just sit all day. And that was kind of my position as Mrs. Steve was urging me to urgent care. And she went so far as to do research while we were on the phone as to the urgent care centers that had the ability to do a chest X-ray while I was there. But I had things to do, James. I'm a busy man. As we've already talked about earlier, I had people to see, bridges to cross, places to go, and armies to conquer. And most of it is done sitting down when I'm at work. So I thought, I'll just muscle through the day. And then if it continues to be bad, and I continue to not be able to breathe, and I have sufficient pain in my chest, I'll go to a walk-in clinic on the way home. And as it turned out, I took a couple of a leave, and it went away within about an hour, and it never came back. And I woke up this morning a little bit scared, because when I woke up yesterday is when it started. So I thought maybe this is something when I'm asleep. But I got up, and it was fine. So I am healthy as a horse, James, and I am here to bless, not just grace, but bless you with my presence.
Okay, so if I am interpreting this story correctly, which I could not be, I am highly biased here, I will admit. So based on the expert medical opinion of literally no one, you have diagnosed yourself as over the mysterious and unexplained pain from yesterday. It came on strongly enough that you were concerned you might die, then the pain went away, and you asked no follow-up questions. Is that where we're at?
Yeah, boy, that's not bad. That's pretty good.
That is wild. That chest pain is the one kind of pain you're not supposed to ignore. So actually, my wife told me a story this week, because she is a leader of men and women. She has many, many subordinates at her workplace. People call in sick for any and all reasons in any given day. She has approximately 1% of the workforce that shows up, as one does. You were also a boss. You get it. So she had somebody who contacted her with chest pains. And my wife, being a reasonable person, told her to go to the hospital, emergency care, whatever it was. And she went in there, and she found out it was not a heart attack. She had I can't remember the word for it, but she had fluid around her heart. It's like a result of an inflammation or infection or some kind. And she had symptoms very similar to what you are describing. And I believe she needed medication of some kind. So you could have fluid around your heart. You could be dying. It could be literally nothing. The first time I thought I was having a heart attack, it was cafeteria pizza in college. It was slathered with grease, which made it amazing in the mouth. And then, but after, like at night, like I was like, why is my heart exploding? What terrible life choices have I made? And then years later, my wife had a similar experience with other food, and I was able to walk her through the experience. I was like, no, you are not in fact dying, although it feels exactly like that. This is heartburn, and it turned out to be that's what it was. Yours is not heartburn, though. You are probably dying. You should seek medical attention. But also, aren't you basically married to a doctor? Which seems like can't Mrs. Steve cut you open? Doesn't she have a license for that?
As much as Mrs. Steve would love to cut me open and root around, just see what she sees, she kind of walked me through how you rule out a heart issue, and it has to do with pushing on where it hurts. And I can't remember. If that makes it worse, that means one thing. And if it makes it better, that means another thing. And I don't remember all the details, James. I was in a bit of a fit of anxiety at the time. But the point being, I'm fine. I'm a doctor. Which, it's all good.
When she was walking you through this, did she tell you before you push, did she say, this outcome means okay, this outcome means not okay? Or did she tell you, do this and then tell me the results? Did you know which outcome you wanted before you did this self-administered test?
She knows better than to tell me what the right answer is, because I think she fears I would not be completely upfront and truthful with her were I to know what the answer is. Well, so, no, I had no idea. I just pushed and... It was a neither here nor there. It didn't change anything. So it didn't make it better, and it didn't make it worse. And frankly, I couldn't really push on it because it was under my sternum. Like it was right where your bronchial tubes kind of branch off.
You know, had we had this conversation 2 years ago, I would be championing your rub some dirt on it and walk it off attitude. I didn't go to the doctor for decades, and it was awesome. And then I almost died twice in the span of a year. You read my stories generally. I do feel like you read the newsletters where I almost die. And then you make me repeat the story here for an audience of no one. So you get a double dose of my cautionary tale. And actually, I can honestly say there have been probably 5 people who have messaged me since my appendix exploded who said I helped save their life because they had something similar happened. They remembered my newsletter and they immediately went to the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah, I am making a difference as a negative example. Like it has come up a lot. So yeah, that's, and there might have been one for an abscess. Actually, I had a friend who had an abscess, but his was in a spot he could actually see it. So he did not almost die. He caught his earlier. But yeah, the appendix almost killed me. In that case, though, I did seek medical attention. And you know how cheap I am. You know how durable I am and how manly I am and how reluctant I am to go to the hospital. So when I went to the hospital at 3 a.m. and accepted that ridiculous emergency room copay, they should have known I was on death's door. And yet they sent me home for a full day saying I was fine and also possibly a big baby until I came back 24 hours later in septic shock. So you, according to my timeline, would be in that sweet spot for the same story where you have decided you are fine and are now just wandering about in a naive haze, confident that nothing can strike you down. Is that where you'd say you are right now?
I am nothing if not invincible, James. But I will say I do have an internal barometer that will max out. As you recall, when we started doing this podcast and I woke up at 3 a.m. and couldn't pee, that required a trip to the hospital. And that required surgery. And that I did go through, albeit a bit reluctantly. But James, I only have so much PTO. I can't be burning this stuff by going to urgent care. Like, I want to make it count.
Well, you do have nights and weekends. Like, you could go to the hospital in your non-work hours. Use your leisure time to keep yourself from dying. That would be my expert recommendation.
That was the plan. If it was still bad when I was going home, then I would stop somewhere. But it resolved within about an hour, and I've had no symptoms since.
So in Steve world, walk me through what you think happened in your body that caused you, would you say, pain and dizziness when you stood?
No. There was, and nothing radiated down my left arm, nothing like that. I didn't particularly have shortness of breath any more than I usually do when I stand up and walk around. But it started when I woke up, and I went to pee, and I was standing there thinking, I have discomfort. I wouldn't call it pain or anything, but there was discomfort in my chest. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. And I walked it off, kind of. It almost went away. I had coffee. I drove in to work. No, actually, I go to the gym in the morning. So I drove to the gym, and it wasn't quite gone. And I noticed when I got out to get gas halfway, it came back. So I started putting two and two together that when I stood up and walked around, it got bad. And when I sat down and relaxed, it got okay. Well, I did my full workout, and it was fine. It wasn't awesome, but it was fine. And then I got to work. And I went from my office to the little kitchenette area, which is probably 50 yards max, and walked back and thought, oh my God, it's bad. And I sat down and it didn't go away. And that's when I texted Mrs. Steve, because I thought, if I die, she gets rich. And I at least need to let her know that she can start dusting off places in the cabin where she can buy new statues of me that she'll probably have commissioned by some Italian artist. But that's when I texted her, and then she actually called. Like, apparently this is not a conversation to have via text message. And it just went from there. And then I took the Aleve, and then it was okay.
This, you know what, this might be our best podcast ever. Not for content, which is terrible, but because we are going to set a record number of YouTube comments. I am going to call it now. Facebook comments, and comments everywhere, wherever we share this, because we are going to tell the story of how you had heart attack-like symptoms, completely unexplained, you did not seek medical attention, they went away, and you decided you're fine. And we are going to have 1,000 comments of people telling you to immediately seek medical attention. You know what people on the internet love more than telling you your kids are going to die? You know what they love more than judging your pigs, or love more than just calling you a terrible parent? They love diagnosing you with a medical condition over the internet.
Yeah.
I made a joke one time about my kid wanting 2 glasses of water in a row at bedtime because they didn't want to go to bed. And like there was somebody diagnosing him with a condition. Like there is, consequently, that is the one comment genre that gets under my skin the most. That just people who have never met my children diagnosing them with some terrible and incredibly serious disease. It drives me nuts. But you now are going to, you're going to experience the same thing because I can't even resist diagnosing you. And I don't care about your survival at all. I have zero investment in the outcome of this story. Man, those comments are going to be lit.
I think our record right now is probably 6 to 8. probably closer to 6. So we'll see if we hit 9, it will be a record one way or the other.
I bet we get 10 comments calling you an idiot and telling you to seek medical attention. But I guess we've
I think
we'll get 10 comments.
Really?
Yeah, but I guess
we've never gotten 10 comments.
It depends. Oh, so it depends on a couple things. It depends if I remember to share it. If I don't remember to share it, the YouTube video only gets like 60 views. Like the audio form, I think, has a organic audience. It does better than that.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I think you get quite a few comments on Twitter. So I don't know if we're counting that or not. Now, my Twitter followers will not care if you live. I will say that right now. Your Twitter followers, man, I dare say you are more beloved in your small niche than I am in mine. Like my people, I am just a character in the corner of their imagination, and they could not care less. You are an actual person under your real name, posting your real life disasters, and I think people are going to care that you're about to die.
Ah, boy, that's a coin toss. It depends on what else, like what else is in the news that day.
I love the, for once, you dangle the bait of I almost died, and you actually might have almost died. With all the hyperbole we lay out here, like, oh yeah, I had serious chest pains, and then didn't go to the doctor, and it went away, and I'm probably fine. Like, that is not the way I saw that story going at all. I at least thought you had, like, a doctor say, oh, this is a false alarm, or this or that's what it was. No, it's like, it is still a full-on mystery, more of a mystery than what was in that box in your office, more of a mystery than the mysterious grave on Rattlesnake Rush. This is the greatest mystery of all. What is going on inside Steve's chest in the vacant hole where his heart should be?
Well, see, you have hit the nail on the head right there. In order to have a heart attack, you need to have a heart. I have neither that nor a soul. And so I'm fairly certain it was just a brush with asthma, even though I've never had asthma. You can develop late life asthma. I'm pretty sure I saw that on the internet somewhere.
But what I love about this is, again, you are married to a medical professional, and you currently have no follow-up steps planned. You're not like, boy, this is a wake-up call, and I'm going to change my diet and exercise, or I'm going to go and start seeing a doctor regularly. Your plan is to do nothing, to do absolutely nothing, and just keep on going, and everything's going to be fine. Is that an accurate summary of the current situation?
It's not only the summary, but the proof and the pudding are meeting, because here I am.
You have survived for one full day following chest pain, which, you know, by the actuary tables, if you survive one day after chest pain, you're probably going to live forever.
Yes. I no longer have to pay life insurance because it's irrelevant.
I am glad we can laugh about your impending death. You know what's going to be the most tasteless thing ever? Is where we post this and like a day later you die. I'm about to make a request. If this actually does die before Wednesday, man, you gotta die before Wednesday and before you schedule this, because you control the audio form. So you die and I'm like, well, I can't run this video, and then the audio still goes up. Like, oh no. Actually, is there a contingency? Can Mrs. Steve access your Twitter account? If you died, would we even know?
Well, she can grab my phone and put a note on Twitter. That's really a good point, though, because I've had followers die, and like their spouse, it was his son that reached out and write DMs to like their favorite people on Twitter and say so-and-so passed away the other day. So without that, they just kind of disappear and nobody knows what happened. So, yes, I'm sure Mrs. Steve, in her delight, would grab the phone and at least tell the world of my ultimate demise.
Okay.
Well, from her new Maserati.
Stress that Wednesday deadline. It's Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern time. I need to know before then, before making the ultimate faux pas. Although, on my side, I think I could post this and just not explain that you actually died and just have no more episodes. And I don't think anyone would notice in that case.
And people would not think twice. They'd be, ah, now I can watch Rogan.
I think Judy P. would wonder why her annual package got returned to sender, but maybe not. Maybe Mrs. Steve would open it and enjoy the spoils, because all, Judy P. just copies the things that I like and then sends them to you as an afterthought. I'm sure Mrs. Steve would like those things too.
Mrs. Steve did open the mystery box in my office too, so she would be the one that still would absorb Judy P.'s Christmas generosity.
Maybe she'll dig up the mystery grave, too. Maybe the podcast will live on with me and Mrs. Steve. She could be the co-host I've been looking for this entire time.
I don't know. People would watch and think, boy, Steve was so much better.
Oh, we've set the bar so low. So low. Well, I do need to actually get out to that porch. I hear my father-in-law walking around in the background. So I will actually spare you. By the way, as a teaser, we did get in a 10 minutes question, which I ruined your week with by telling you we had to record two podcasts this week. And now I'm going to bail on that and say we're only going to record one podcast today. But you don't have much time left to live anyway, so I'm going to dismiss you early. To go and enjoy this time and say let's spend time with loved ones, plural, but maybe just loved ones, singular. There's got to be somebody out there who liked you.
The dog likes me. Yeah.
All right. That was your cue to take off with the outro. I'm not the outro guy, Steve. I really set it up so you can spike it.
I was peering over at Mrs. Steve. And I didn't see love, I saw lust. That's what I saw, James Breakwell. But until we meet again, and dare I say, if we meet again, this is Steve the Exploding Heart Olivas for James the Exploding Unicorn Breakwell saying thanks for watching, thanks for listening. If it goes away, it was never a big deal in the first place. And as always, two wrongs can make a right.
A few moments later.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Wrong and Wronger. Like Lazarus, we are back from the dead. I am Steve, still alive and kicking Olivas. He is James. He looks poor, mostly because he is Breakwell, saying thanks for hanging with us through this brief hiatus where I kind of made a deal with the Grim Reaper, James, and I'm back for the attack with you.
Man, I feel like it's been almost 7 weeks since we had a conversation. We've said a single word to each other. Is there a particular reason for that? Because I know last time I was... Well, actually, you know what I did? I did something I swore I'd never do. I did the unforgivable sin. Are you feeling full of grace and generosity today? Because I'm going to need to ask your forgiveness.
I have a new lease on life, of course.
I went back and I listened to our most recent unaired episode of Wrong and Wronger with the conversation we had at a very pivotal moment in your life. And that I'm hoping we can make part one of this to have a very interesting juxtaposition part two. So hopefully this is like minute 26 of the longest episode ever of Wrong and Wronger. So what happened the moment after we stopped recording that episode?
Oh, I was so smug back then. It's interesting, in the half hour leading up to right now when we're recording, I had to actually kind of rehearse the story because I haven't told more than maybe two people this story because I haven't been able to talk to people. Man. Like, you were one of the first ones to write to me and say, hey, I'm going to call. How you doing? And I'm like, I can't talk because it wore me out. When I first came back from the hospital, I literally couldn't say a sentence because my lung capacity was so low. If anybody remembers the show Malcolm in the Middle, there was a character named Stevie, ironically enough, that had lung issues. And when he would say a sentence, he would have to take a breath. And that's the only way I could talk. And my vocal cords got screwed up from when they shoved the breathing tube down my throat. So I just croaked. I couldn't talk. And then after that kind of passed, I still couldn't talk because it would wear me out. I remember the day I got home from the hospital, I called my daughter. I haven't talked to my father. I haven't talked to my son. Like, I haven't talked to people because it just kills me. And my daughter and I had a conversation that I don't even remember. And there was some miscommunication, and the whole thing got screwed because I wasn't right. So I appreciate everyone's generosity, and so many people reached out, both locally here and online. And I just apologize that I had to put everyone off, and that includes you, Breakwell.
Well, if you need to take breaks in this, that's fine. This is obviously our lowest priority. And also, I would be happy to tell your story from my extremely limited perspective very far away.
I have noticed you have never been as active on my social media as you've been over the last month and a half or so. Like, I see you pop up all the time, so I know you're lurking out there.
I gotta say, so anyway, I actually accidentally probably had the frontest row of seats to this beyond Mrs. Steve, just completely by accident. So the podcast that up till now nobody's seen, and after this you probably will have just seen, we were recording the day after the first minor incident, which, mind you, after my many, many near-death experiences, I used to be the guy who never went to the hospital. But recently I have a perfect record of, I go to the hospital when I'm about to die. I'm like 2 for 2 on that. And you were telling me a story that sounded like a hospital situation, and you were pretty convinced it wasn't. And then that night, I believe the rest of the story commences, and I'll let you tell that. But I will say that after you went in for surgery, because I was texting you up till then, you were feeling pretty normal at that point. And we were communicating like normal, and you're like, yeah, going in for surgery in the morning. And then I heard nothing for 3 days. You didn't respond to a text message. No, you didn't post on your account. Nobody else posted on your account, which was ironic because the very last thing we were talking about was, how would I even know if you died? So then I started looking through my phone. I was like, well, what's Mrs. Steve's number? I think he usually calls me from that. And I could not find it. So my next step was to start Googling obituaries. And I kid you not, as I opened up my phone to start looking for obituaries, you sent me back a single thumbs up. And I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm just going to lay off and let him recover. And that was that. Although I will say, you scared a lot of people. Even my parents were asking how you were doing, although that might just be a shared mortality thing. You know, there before the grace of God go I. You've spooked the elderly, Steve. You've spooked everybody. But you're here to tell the tale. And I, for one, am excited to finally hear it.
Man, there was a gap between when I went to the hospital and when I was able to get in for surgery. And I was completely radio silent because the surgery had a decent probability of not turning out well. Ooh. And I wanted to make sure before I said anything, I got through that surgery. Mm-hmm. And to pick up the tale, if people, I suppose we'll post the cocky conversation that we had when I knew that it was nothing when I had chest pains Friday. I tell you what, Mrs. Steve has rarely been as pissed off as she was after that Saturday night. Like, why? She was telling me to go into the hospital all day Friday. I was like, no, it's going to be fine. And then Saturday night, it came back about 7:30, and it wasn't chest pain. Like I described in the last episode, it felt like I ate too much. It was in that region. Like, it wasn't in my heart region. Nothing. It didn't feel like something was sitting on my chest. This might be our longest episode of Wrong and Wronger ever, by the way. Nothing went down my arm, just like I mentioned, and it came back again Saturday. And Mrs. Steve went to bed, and I stayed up, which already kind of aroused her suspicion. Mm. And she went to bed about 9, and I sat and just for like 2.5 hours, I just fretted, I guess. I was waiting for it to go away. I tried to relax. It didn't go away. And I remember there were a couple false starts. I started walking into the bedroom to tell her this ain't good. And then I turned around and came back out. Mm. And even the time where I finally told her, I was about to turn around and come back out, and it was almost midnight, and I woke her up, and I said, we got to go to the hospital. And fortunately, the hospital is right up the highway from our house. It's less than 10 minutes. And I walked into the emergency room, and apparently I didn't look very good. And the nurse
I'm going to interrupt you there. That's a perpetual condition with you, so I don't know how they would know something's wrong.
Well, later, when I was stable, the nurse said, you looked gray, like you were ashy, man, when you walked in. Like, my blood wasn't circulating, I guess. And I said, I just need you to tell me it's indigestion and it's nothing and I can go home. And they hooked me up to all these things. And the nurse said, well, it's not indigestion and you're not going home.
Ooh.
And she said, the weather conditions are right. We got the helicopter coming. They got to take you into the heart center at St. Thomas in Nashville. Man. And I said, oh. And they started me on a blood thinner and they put nitroglycerin under my tongue. And then she said, well, This is my, I don't remember much about this, but she said something like, we got to, this is my interpretation, we got to keep you alive long enough to get you to the hospital. So we're going to give you something called the Clot Buster. And there's a special release form you have to sign before you take this drug because, again, this is my interpretation. She said, if you bump yourself and bruise, you could bleed out. So we need your... We need your consent to give you this drug, but you need the drug. So I signed the consent and they gave it to me. And then the helicopter people showed up and they got me on the chopper. And by the way, this is early March and it's cold and it's after midnight. And I had to leave my jacket behind at the hospital. Mrs. Steve went and got it. And then the hospital's like an hour 15 driving from our house. And Mrs. Steve had to make that trek, and the helicopter was maybe 15 or 20 minutes, which, by the way, there's no heat in the helicopter, so I'm freezing in there. Wait. Yeah, and there's two nurses that are, like, fiddling with all of these, I forgot what they're called. They're things that they stick to your chest, and their hands are freezing. And I was just thinking, you know, I think I texted this to you. I kind of thought my first helicopter ride ever would involve volcanoes or a cityscape at dusk. But no, I'm going over the hills and dales of rural Tennessee in the pitch black, freezing to death. But then we got to the hospital, and it was just like in the movies, like a whole team of people rushed out and met the helicopter and pulled me off. And as they're wheeling me up to the hospital, now I have the helicopter blades churning up a lot of wind, and I'm freezing. But they're asking me a bunch of questions about what I ate, when I ate, what it feels like, what, and I don't remember the conversation, but they got me into the cath lab because they were going to put stents in, and they went in through my wrist. You can probably still see there's a little scab there. But the cardiologist said your I think it's an EKG, is normal. So the Clot Buster did what it's supposed to do. Let's do this. Because the Clot Buster's still in you, it's actually dangerous to try to put a cath up your arm and into your heart. So let's wait till Monday. This is like 3 a.m. now, Sunday, Saturday into Sunday. It's hard to tell what time it is because that was daylight savings time night and all the clocks were screwed up. And he said, let's wait till Monday morning. We'll bring you into the cath lab. We'll get those stents in. We'll fix you up. I said, okay. So they got me up to my room. It's like 4 a.m. Mrs. Steve was already there. And she went home and went to bed. And then Sunday, I just kind of hung out at the hospital. And they had me hooked up to a bunch of things, and I'm on a constant drip of a blood thinner. And even to go pee, I have to sort of carry all this machinery with me. And I just sort of hung out. Mrs. Steve came and hung out with me a little while. And then Monday morning, they lowered the boon on me. Bastards. So they got me down to the cath lab first thing Monday morning, and the cardiologist is there, and the anesthesiologists are there, and they're like, all right, we're going to put you under. Next thing you know, you're going to be good as new. I said, okay. And I don't know how long I was out, because you've been out. Like, it feels like a second,
and then
you're back up again. And the cardiologist was kind of leaning over me, and it felt like his face was right in mine. He said, well, I got some bad news. And I said, what? And he said, what you got going on cannot be stented. They're going to have to open you up, and you got 3 or 4 bypasses coming. I said, all right. And then I went back to the room, and a little later, the cardiothoracic surgeon comes in, and he said, we can either get you tomorrow or Wednesday in for surgery, but I've got to get some imaging to see which veins we're going to harvest. Because I guess they can either pull veins out of your forearm or out of your legs. And they actually pulled one out of my chest, too. And now it's interesting. I don't sweat on my left side of my chest because they also took the nerve out of there. So I've tweeted this a couple times. I think you've seen it. My left boob is completely numb, and it doesn't sweat. Like, it's a really weird thing. But he said, so let's get you in for imaging, and we'll see if we can get you in tomorrow or Wednesday. I said, okay. So all day Monday, I'm in doing imaging this and imaging that. And Tuesday morning, he came in and said, well, I got good news and bad news. I said, what now? And he said, the good news is we can get you this morning, but the bad news is there's something with your aorta that I don't like. And I thought, well, it's sort of served me well this whole time. I'm kind of good with it. And he said, I'd like to get you in for more imaging because I might have to replace the aorta. I said, okay, that sounds like something we should probably take a look at. So he said, too, that I have four blockages of near 100% or at 100%, including the widowmaker, the left descending aorta, I think it's called, or left aorta descending. I don't remember.
How were you walking around? How would you? You've been living a completely normal life. What was going on?
Like I said in our last episode, I was running on the treadmill the day before. Like, I had no symptoms. And people on social media are like, what should we tell guys your age? Like, what should they look out for? I said, I don't know. Nothing? Like, get checkups regularly. That's my only advice. And anyway, so Tuesday, I'm going back in for more. I went into an MRI machine, and that was weird. But he came back in and said, well, your aorta, his bottom line was, your aorta's not great, but it's good enough. And I said, good. And so he said, let's get you in first thing in the morning tomorrow. And I said, okay. So Wednesday morning, and by the way, they don't let you sleep in the hospital because every 4 hours or 6 hours, it's like Jeff Gordon's pit crew comes in to get all your vitals. They weigh you at midnight every night, which means you have to physically get out of bed and go step on the scale, which before surgery was annoying because I would sleep. After surgery, I was awake all night anyway. I couldn't sleep, and I still have trouble with sleep. But so Wednesday at like 6 a.m., I didn't tell Mrs. Steve this part, but the nurse that came in to shave me, she was young and she was kind of hot. And she shaves everything from like the bottom of your beard down. And I don't know why exactly, but she screwed up my beard. So that's why I just have a mustache now. I just shaved the rest of it. But everything, man, everything gets shaved. And I've talked to a few people about why that is, because they don't go in your armpits, right? Like they do go in your groin, kind of. They get into the femoral artery, but they don't go in your shins. No, actually, that's where they harvested a vein. But I think what I've heard was that for people that have like lice, that this makes sure that the surgeon doesn't have to deal with anything creepy crawly when you're in there. So they shave you like a Ken doll. But then I went down and I was freaked out, and Mrs. Steve thought I was going down at 8, and they took me down at 7. So she did about 100 miles an hour, and she was weirded out when she got there. And then they just had me wait, and it was almost an hour that she and I were waiting. And I was thinking, I could go home right now, and we could record Wrong and Wrong. Everything would be okay.
It was obviously your top priority. I'm glad this podcast remained top of mind.
But then they took me in, and this was not the cath lab. This was full OR. This was like you see in the movies, and it was vast, and there were things everywhere. And there were like probably 10 people in there, and it was a major ordeal. It took 6 hours. Man. They actually stopped my heart for 6 hours. So in the eyes of God, I was dead for 6 hours, and I came back when they restarted it. But the other thing is they have you laid out like you're nailed to a cross. For 6 hours, they have you stationary. And so my shoulders were all screwed. So I couldn't barely move my shoulders when I woke up, except I didn't wake up all the way. They had me in the intensive care unit, and I was sort of in and out of consciousness. And I remember they had to move me to a chair, and I'm like, I can't make it to a chair. I remember having this weird fever dream conversation with the nurse, and the nurses were all super nice except in the intensive care unit. Like that crew, I have nothing but disdain. So they had to get like three people to lift me out of bed and set me in a chair. And I remember it was so painful. She gave me a shot of Dilaudid, and my life turned great all of a sudden. But I just sort of nodded off, and they had me on Dilaudid the whole time down there, except I wasn't down there for very long before they put me back up in the general population. And Mrs. Steve got pissed. She's like, why are you not still in ICU? You can't get out of bed. You can't turn over. But anyway, I spent 9 days total in the hospital, and I probably slept, I'm not even exaggerating, in The 5 days post-surgery, I bet I slept roughly 5 hours total. Like, I couldn't sleep. And I tried everything. I didn't take any painkillers after the Dilaudid because I was never really in pain. My body was sort of in discomfort. I was agitated. But one of the kind nurses, it was a male nurse, he said, listen, I don't know if you know this, but we're authorized to give you a double dose of the painkiller if you want. And I said, all right, come back in around 10:30 and I'll be in pretty bad pain. And I was. The pain hit a 7 on the pain scale. It's weird how that works, James Breakwell. And he gave me a double dose of the painkiller, hoping it would help me sleep, and it did nothing.
Whoa.
It's like, well, this is not working out well. Oh, and the other thing, I think I tweeted this. So the surgery was on Wednesday. On Saturday, my nurse came in and said, listen, if you don't poop, we have to go in after it. Mm. And I said, what? She said, you need to poop. And that's when I started walking. Like, I couldn't stand up very well before then. And she gave me some, like, pill laxatives. And I walked back and forth in my room almost all day. And by the end of the day, I had a poop that would have probably ended the Civil War had it happened at the Mason-Dixon line in 1865. Like, it was epic. It was my best poop ever, James. Like, people in the room next door had to do a little mop up after this one. But that was good. So finally I'm discharged and I came home and it's been nothing but good since then. I'm walking about 10,000 steps a day now and I still can't sleep to save my life. Like I've tried about everything. Last night I actually slept. Once in a while the sleep stuff works. Most of the time it doesn't. But I'm here with you now, and I guess I'm still alive, and I've had the follow-up with the surgeon, and I got a primary care doctor. I've never had one before, so that was fun. And everyone says the same thing. Oh, and everyone on social media says, yeah, the sleep stuff will work itself out. It'll come back. And I haven't seen any improvement in 7 weeks. But here we are. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I guess a few points of order. One, you're new to this whole almost dying thing. Up till now, that's been my shtick. I don't really appreciate you stealing it, but there's not much I can do now. You really committed to the bit. But what you do when you almost die is you wake up the next morning, preferably around 4 or 5 a.m., and you start writing your next newsletter and you monetize that pain right away at the first available opportunity. So when you went radio silent for 3 or 4 days, I was worried, but more importantly, I was offended because you had broken the natural order of things. I don't get the sleep thing though. Like if you're not in pain, why no sleep?
I guess there's a double whammy. One is extreme trauma does change your brain's neurochemistry. Mm. There's a part of your brain called the reticular activation formation that is responsible for your states of consciousness. Like if you damage it, you're in a coma. People in a coma have that thing damaged. Mm. You don't wake up again. But I'm guessing between the trauma and the anesthesia, something throws that thing off. And it's almost universal that it happens. Like, it's shocking how many people on social media have had heart surgery. Like guys my age just have heart issues. I guess we're not supposed to live this long. But like to a man, everyone's like, yeah, couldn't sleep. 2 years later, I'm still not sleeping well. Wow. Or their wives are telling me about their husband's journey and he couldn't sleep. And I've been in the recliner because for the first few weeks being home, I couldn't sleep on my side. Like the sternum. It's sort of wired together like a spiral-bound notebook, and that thing had to stay, like, flat. So I've been sleeping on a recliner, and I just don't sleep. So I'm listening to podcasts. I'm making my way through Monk on Netflix, the TV series. Like, it's amazing how long the night is when you can't sleep.
Man, without feeling any of your pain or having any of the risks, that kind of sounds amazing. You get so much more out of your life than I get out of mine. It gets dark and I just keel over and I waste my existence being unconscious. And here you are. You could write like 15 books a year. You could craft the next masterpiece. You could learn a new skill. You could do anything. You could also like test the bounds of human physiology. Like if you really can't sleep, I mean, start picking out the most boring movies you can find. Maybe you'll be the first person to stay awake from them. I mean, there's some things I turn them on, and like nature documentaries, for example. I refuse to believe in the history of the world that anyone has stayed awake through more than 10 minutes of planet Earth. It's got those bright colors, that soothing voice. I'm instantly out. You could be the first to make it to the end and see what's in there. I bet they hide all sorts of unreasonable stuff at the end. Have you tried these it sounds like your brain is broken, so it's just not going to put you to sleep. Have you tried really seeing what you can get out of this?
Oh, not at all. No, I just I'm up and feeling awful about it most of the time.
Man, just trying to.
I've tried Benadryl. I've tried a double dose of Benadryl. I've tried Unisom, like over-the-counter sleep pills. I've tried melatonin, upping the dose of melatonin. I got weed gummies are not legal here, but I've gotten my hands on some, and everything works once and then never works again. The weed worked once, has not worked since. The Benadryl worked once, then it didn't work. Then I doubled the dose, that worked once. The Unisom worked once. I don't know what else I've tried. Probably nothing. Now I'm starting to like make combinations of things. I'm trying to use like an alchemist. I'm trying to use like an apothecary approach to figuring out what is going to work here.
I've got a suggestion, and I want you to brace yourself first. I know your heart is weak. Hug that heart pillow of yours real quick. Have you considered...
Oh, I had it over here.
Oh.
I had it well, for a show and tell, but I don't have it anymore.
Try not to die, and if you do die, this time try to, you know, write your newsletter the next day appropriately. But have you considered going back and listening to 500 episodes of Wrong and Wronger? Because I refuse to believe, even in a medically compromised state, anyone could stay awake through 500 episodes of this podcast.
Man, it's funny you bring that up. I haven't tried that. I don't know that anyone in their right mind would do it. I worry more about my mental health versus my physical health if I listen to that much Wrong and Wronger. I don't know how a few of our super fans have done it, to be honest with you.
Man, you know, once you started dying, once the word got out, so the day that you after, I guess you probably had a minor heart attack or something, then I talked to you in the eye of the storm, and then the big one hit.
Yeah.
So, like, on that day, in that podcast I just listened to, I mentioned to you that for the first time in months, we got in a question for 10 minutes to save your marriage, and I was telling you, before the surgery, you got to stay alive now, because we got to answer this. Well, while you were down, we got two more questions. We have a stockpile, a bonanza, a king's ransom of questions, three whole questions that will keep us in content for literally three quarters of a month. So good times are ahead, my friend.
I don't know how in practice I am. Like, I've been out of work this whole time, and I'm not going back till June 10th. So I had, I get a nice 12-week vacation that I'm in the middle of right now. So I haven't done anything psychologically related.
Well, you've certainly impacted the psychology of everyone around us. It sounds like a head trip, and it's been interesting to see the not super cheerful Steve, because I didn't think anything could keep you down. But here you are. You came back to this. When I reached out to you, I was like, boy, he's been looking for an excuse. He's been looking out for an out for a while. I wonder if he's going to tell me, you know, I'm awake 24 hours a day with literally nothing to do, and I do not have time for you. This is the end. But yet here we are. Here we are. And I'm glad, because I actually did not call you during that time, because it's like, you know what? One, I'm hilarious, and I was afraid I would kill you. But two, I thought, you know what? This first contact, this needs to be authentic. I need to get the story out there. Because let's be honest, it's a shame to waste any information on me. It should always be distributed to a slightly wider audience of two or three people.
Well, Judy P., I'm sure, will appreciate the update.
Man.
I tell you what else has been kind of an unusual consequence of all of this is I've lost like 30 pounds without even trying in 7 weeks. Mm-hmm. Like, and for 1 week, I was stable. for the first few, my body was so desperate for protein. Like, I lost all my upper body muscle. Like, I used to be pretty thick up top, and then my body just ate all of that. I literally couldn't eat enough to keep up with what I needed to heal. And in fact, because I was up all night anyway, I used to eat a full meal around 3 a.m. just to try to get another meal packed in there. And it was still, I was running such a deficit. I lost 20 pounds in the first couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks. And then this past week, I started losing again. I lost 5 pounds in the last 7 days. And I don't know what that's all about. But I was worried about it at first. Like, I was like, holy crap. I just can't eat any more than I am, and I'm worried about having this thing eat me up from the inside out. It's a weird thing. My emotions were all over the road for about 2 weeks. Like, I would just burst into tears, like, just having a conversation with my wife. I'm like, God dang. Like, it was such a weird upheaval of life, just both existential and physiological. I recommend it for everyone, James.
Yeah, that sounds like a trip. It sounds like you're describing a good time that would be enjoyed by all. Holy cow! Yeah, that's up. Okay, so I have seen the tweets. I have been following your tweets closely ever since.
Yes,
I legitimately thought you might be dead. I have been a little bit concerned. I've been checking up on you, but you make it sound, man, like you were like Hulk Hogan going into this. Like, how much upper body strength was there to lose there, really? But also that does come back. Muscle memory is a thing. When I'm busily not listening to our podcast, I listen to a lot of weightlifting podcasts and stuff like that. And honestly, when you get back to the gym finally, you will have steroid-like gains because your muscles remember, however it works, what size they used to be. So for a brief period, you may actually look, I'm not going to say attractive, but perhaps less unattractive. I have a question about your depression meals, though. I see you posting them, and I guess I don't understand what you are and aren't allowed to eat. And I say this as someone who has, over the past few years, experimented with some of the stupidest eating patterns known to man. So, like, what's going on there?
Wait, I'm not sure what you're asking.
What are you allowed to eat and not eat? Like, I'll see like a can of tuna and like a cracker, but then you talk about losing weight, and it seems like there are other foods you could eat to, you know, not lose weight. So what are the rules? What are the boundaries of your life right now?
Well, the funny thing is, when they sent me out of the hospital, even at my discharge meeting, there was a lot that they don't tell you. Like, I didn't know what I could eat. I didn't know what I could get my heart rate up to. I didn't know. I'm not sure Miss Steve wants me to say this out loud. I didn't know when I could have sex again. Like, they don't tell you any of this.
Oh, man.
So I had to research online all of this stuff. And for the first week, like, I had to sort of hold Mrs. Steve while I walked. They want you to walk every day. Mm-hmm. And the first couple of days, I just walked in the house because I would walk 20 steps and I'd have to sit down. And then when I finally got outside, I would have to hold Mrs. Steve in the driveway and just walk a little ways and turn around and come back. But after everything kind of got rolling, I really didn't know how to eat or if walking up a hill, I could get my heart rate above 80 or 90. Like, I was worried about all that. So I don't meet with the dietitian until I think May 15th. So for now, the only instruction I had was don't eat too much salt, don't eat too much cholesterol. And so those are the two things I've been living by. The one thing I have put into my diet, like when I started cardiac rehab this week and my blood pressure is pretty low. Like this morning it was 99 over 69. And the nurse said, you're going to drink something before we get started here. I said, okay. And usually they give water. I got Gatorade to try to get some salt in me. But I've added, to try to keep my weight on and get a little salt, I've added salted cashews. So I have a lot of cashews because they're packed with a lot of calories. They're reasonably low in cholesterol. And then mine are lightly salted, but I've got to add a little salt in because when they first send you home, they have you track your weight because they're worried you're going to retain fluid. So I started tracking my weight, and they're like, if you gain 5 pounds, you call us and come in immediately. I said, okay. And I lost like 5 pounds in the first 3 days. I'm like, this is not working out the way it's supposed to. And so anyway, a couple weeks ago, I added the cashews and I'm eating a lot of those. And that helped buoy my weight for the first week. And now it isn't again. So I don't know what I'll change.
Man, I would enjoy an all cashew diet. You don't have to sleep. You can live on cashews. You're really selling this whole heart attack thing to me. I might consider it down the road. I kind of like it. I think I called you a vampire in a text, and I stand by that. You are awake all the hours everybody else is asleep, but the difference is you don't have to sleep during the day either, man. That's have you considered? I mean, just really lean into this. You're wasting your time with Monk and all these old Netflix episodes. Get an Xbox. Get some RPG that takes 1,000 hours to beat and just really lean in there. When people wonder who is this level 60 wonder who is a god among men, it will be you, the heart attack recovery guy who cannot sleep and lives on cashews. That could be your legacy.
I'm not a video game guy. I did say a heart attack is better than Ozempic. If you're looking to lose some weight, I recommend it for everyone.
Man, yeah, all kinds of upside. This is a very silver lining kind of episode. We have given the upside, the good part of massive heart trauma, but really the best part of all of this is that for perhaps the first time in the history of the world, I was right about something. I went back and listened to the old podcast, and there was some concern coming from my side. Now, granted, it was mixed in with me being a sarcastic jerk. I mean, that's the only way advice is ever going to come. But like, you know, recently a friend from college reminded me of a story. He and his girlfriend at the time were walking, and he fell and he cut open like below his lip. And his girlfriend said, "You got to go to the emergency room. You need stitches." He's like, nah, I'm fine," which is the universal man response to any damage. And she said, "No, you need to go to the hospital." He said, "Fine, we're going to go find James and he's going to be the decider." And I looked at him, I was like, "Oh yeah, you're fine. Don't go to the hospital." Then he smiled and the whole area under his lip pulled apart. And I was like, "Oh buddy, you got to go." And he did. And he got a bunch of stitches. So I have long been the arbiter. As the cheapest man alive and somebody who's only marginally invested in your survival, if it ever gets to the point where I tell anyone they should probably go to the hospital, you are as close to death as you can be. Interestingly, I've seen two or three tweets like this since your incident, but there have been doctors tweeting, and they said 100% of the time, if a man comes into the emergency room and says, "I'm fine, but my wife was worried and wanted me to get checked out," 100% of the time, there is something catastrophically wrong. And once again, the wisdom of wives has come through. So maybe that's the real lesson here, that regardless of all else, you gotta listen to that spouse, even if they are going to get super rich if you die.
Well, in a weird way, this has strengthened my marriage too, because she's doing 100%. Now I can lift 15 to 20 pounds now, so I'm starting to do some things, but all of the outside work she's had to do, I still can't drive in the tractor because it's jarring and that my chest wouldn't handle it. So she's been doing all the mowing. She's doing all the weed eating because I can't hold the weed eater. That thing weighs a ton. And she does all the driving. Like, I have to sit in the back seat until week 8.
Oh.
So, yeah, because the airbag would kill me if if we hit something and the airbag deploys, it would cave in my chest.
But
so
you get a chauffeur is what you're saying. Trooper. A chauffeur and a designated driver. Again, you are living the good life here.
She calls me Miss Daisy, yes.
Is alcohol off limits? Did they say anything about that?
Yeah, I have not had a drink since before March 9th. I finally sneezed a couple days ago, and I've been scared to sneeze because the only time I've ever taken a painkiller, I've taken one since I've been home, and I have a whole bottle of them. People want to rob me. Because at the beginning when you cough, that's why you have the heart pillow. It's so you can kind of hug the pillow and keep your chest from moving while you're coughing. And God, it's bad. It hurts. Mm. And sometimes you cough kind of superficially. And then sometimes your body's like, "We got to get this thing out of here. So brace yourself." And I coughed once and it was so bad I took a painkiller. But that's just coughing, like a sneeze. And I lay out when I sneeze. I make sure people all around me know that Steve is sneezing. And I finally sneezed yesterday. No, it was 2 days ago. And I was by myself, and I did have the heart pillow hugged against my chest. And it wasn't quite as bad as I thought, because I've had 7 weeks to heal, or mm-hmm. 6 weeks to heal. So fortunately, my sneeze came late in the game.
Man, well, I know it's going to, much like your heart attack threatened your life, it might kill me to say this, but I am genuinely glad you have survived and are recovering. This is a good thing. I know we don't tell the people in our lives that they matter when they do matter. And you are right on the cusp of mattering. You are so, so close. In another 500 or 600 episodes, I will probably genuinely value your friendship. We're getting there. We really are.
Wow. Well, it was so touching how much people online care. Like, you and me, we just put out jokes. Mm-hmm. We're almost neither here nor there. We're not influencers on the political side, mm-hmm. and we're not, we don't do anything seriously that impacts people's lives, but apparently we serve a pretty important role. And I know you get a lot more likes and retweets than I do. The most I've ever gotten has been like 1,000 something, and that's happened maybe twice in my life, mm-hmm. 12 years on Twitter. But the one where I announced that I had a heart attack and open heart surgery, I got like 3,500 likes. Ooh. And hundreds of retweets, and like I think I got 600 comments, people praying for me and telling their stories and just being supportive. And it's amazing how many people we touch out there, James.
It is. And we could have touched more, but you ruined the game by having your big heart attack so fast. So our whole... Okay, so first of all, in that first part of this episode, the wild thing to me is the only thing I remember about that that episode was you ignoring some very, worrying signs. But actually, that conversation doesn't come up until a third of the way into that episode. For like 9 minutes, we talk about furniture in your house. And then you casually throw out, oh yeah, and then this morning I almost died. Like, wait, what? And then we detoured. But I remember the whole ending was that I said, if we post this and you haven't gone to the doctor, people love telling you when something's wrong. They love diagnosing you through the internet. And I said, if we post this, I think we will get 10 comments, 10 real comments. And we didn't get it posted because you were touch and go there. I lost contact with you. So we missed our chance for 10 YouTube comments, but I'm glad you got the 600 Twitter comments. I'm glad you got it somewhere. People do care, and you do matter to us more than you'll ever know. So we are delighted. And I'm going to say all these nice things. We're not going to do it today. I'm not going to push you today, but we are going to get through those 10 minutes to save your marriage questions. And we are going to keep recording this because it turns out in the 7 weeks where you were on death's door, I have no replacements lineup. There's nobody else. This podcast dies with you. So you gotta stick around, if only for that.
Wow, I'm flattered.
Trapped is the word you're looking for.
Trapped. Well, good. Now, in fact, when you wrote yesterday, I had it took me a minute to write back to you because I was in the shower, mm-hmm. and I was really thinking in there, I'm okay now. I can do all the self-care stuff. The last two things that I was able to do were take off a shirt. Like, I could put on a shirt, but I couldn't take one off, mm-hmm. and tie my shoes. And once I could do those, I could do anything that I needed to do for myself, which is a load off Mrs. Steve's mind. Mm-hmm. But then I thought, it's time we to get the story out there on Wrong and Wronger. And then while I was saying that, you had texted me.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, let's do it. Great minds.
I was a little perplexed by the lack of pushback. So I guess that was a rare moment of synchronicity. I am glad you were finally ready. I was immensely curious. And I got to admit, it was killing me not to call, but I was like, I got to wait. I just got to wait this one out. Because the last person he needs to hear from right now is me. But I'm glad we got it done. And with that, I think we can probably wrap this one up. Our longest episode ever. Part two here has been 42 minutes. Part one was a solid 26. And this will be the real test. We'll see if somebody listens to the whole hour-long saga. Because, man, this might be the only worthwhile story we've ever told.
You know, you might need to post part one after part two so people have some context as to what it is. Otherwise, it might be, like, exquisitely confusing to people.
Part one after part two. Oh, I, well,
yeah.
You know what? I was thinking I was just going to run them together, and I was going to say this is two-part. I was gonna tease it up. I mean, we could release it in both formats. I think it's going to work as one whole thing. But see, this right here, if you ever doubted if we were lying when we said we don't have production meetings, there are no production meetings. This is us in a recording debating what we're even going to do with this gigantic lump of content we just generated. And we will figure it out, folks. We'll figure it out.
All right. Well, this has been a double, a triple, I suppose, as I look at the timestamp here. This has been a triple episode of Wrong and Wronger. And, I hope we're both back next week. But until then, both hosts who have cheated death, one more than once, as Breakwell has cheated death on several occasions, I choose to save all mine up for one really good one. But we'll see you next week, everybody. Until we meet again, this is Steve Alee. This is Dr. Steve for James the Exploding Unicorn Breakwell saying thanks for watching, thanks for listening. Don't die this week. And if you do, make sure you post it on Twitter. And until we meet again, remember, as always, two wrongs can